I'd like to give an introduction first. And there are two problems in teaching beginners. One problem is a problem in teaching beginners Musar, and then there's a problem in teaching beginners Gemara. Okay? In Musar, the problem is that people come with a conscience type of moral and ethical system. And you have to change that to an intellectual or rational type of system. I'd like to try to define the difference. In the conscience type of moral and ethical system, there's black and white. There's good and evil, very clearly defined. Okay? And it's usually all, like for instance, either there's absolutely nothing wrong in having an abortion, or it's murder. You see, it's very clear to the conscience one way or the other. In the Torah, for instance, there are times when you shouldn't have an abortion. There's times when you're allowed to have an abortion. There's a time when you're obligated to have an abortion. I heard of a case for psychological reasons, so there was different opinions among the poskim, you know, whether she could have an abortion. So the thing is in a rational type of system, it's not like, for instance, in Musa, you might want to define the difference between stingy and frugal. And you might come out one view now, you might come out with another view next month or next year. Because how you draw the line, and as you get clarity or more understanding, it keeps changing. So most people come with a conscience-type orientation, and you have to change it to a rational orientation. That's the problem with Musa. In Gemara, the problem is that you're coming from a people that memorize to an intellectual. And what they do is, if you teach them steps, they memorize the steps, but the mind doesn't see the steps. So therefore, you have to be very, very careful to move them from memorization to where the mind sees it. Okay? This is the problem, the basic problem with teaching Gemara. The way I do that is that, therefore, I test them orally. So that when if I notice that there's a slight step missing, or it's not clear, then I'll start questioning them. So therefore, they force to think, and after a while, they learn to. And also, when I question them, the question is type of question to guide that there's a step missing. I notice after a while, when I'm teaching the Gemara, they learn to ask those type of questions. So they start seeing to ask those type of questions to see the difference in the steps. But I see, I'm not saying you can't do it in the written test. I'm just saying this is the way I do it. It can be done. I mean, if you formulate a test correctly, very well, I mean, then probably you can force them to think through a written test. But this I do every day. I don't wait for the test. I mean, I give them a certain amount of information, and then I test them immediately within a day or two. So the thing is, it's constantly being reinforced that they're obligated to understand and to be able to answer my questions. So they can't rely on their memory, but they must rely on their understanding. Also, a lot of people that already learned in other yeshivas, many times what happens is that they formulate the question, and they don't formulate the question. They label one statement as a question or a kasha or a contradiction, but the mind doesn't see the two statements, but the Gemara only makes one statement. Then they label a second statement as an answer, but they don't see how it removes the contradiction. First of all, because they didn't see that it removes the contradiction. And second of all, that's not written in the Gemara. So they only follow the words of the Gemara. Also, I notice, like, people quote Pirkei Avos, you know? So they sound intelligent that they're quoting Pirkei Avos. But Pirkei Avos has a tremendous amount of depth to it, and they might see it as a very superficial thing. You understand? Or they might look at it, like I said before, from a conscience-oriented moral and ethical system. So therefore, it's not really where they're really thinking it through, but they're quoting greats that they see that makes sense. So it looks like they're making sense, but you have to really know if they themselves follow. Right. In other words, when I teach, it's like this. I teach them the words, and I teach them the logic. And I explain to them that I got the logic from the words. Okay? Now, they can't do that yet, but they should be able to see how, in other words, or if they don't see how the logic is from the words, they should be able to question. Where you see, it's two separate things. But the thing is that they're learning to translate, and they're learning to translate as part and parcel of the ideas. But if you separate it as two different subjects, then they're going to just revert to memorization. It must be that you're constantly working on the world of ideas. It's very important. In other words, you have no choice that you must work on memorization of words. You understand? But however, immediately it should not be left in memorization, but it should be shown that it's really a rational system, that these words are expressing ideas, and the mind must see those ideas. Or not, they're going to start labeling, they're going to get into the habit of labeling this statement as a question and labeling the next statement as an answer. That's a very bad habit to get into. Then you have to undo the wrong view.
Why let them do it?
Yeah, in other words, if you're doing it at the same time, in other words, you give a class, in other words, when I give a class, I first give them, I give them all the translations. Right? Then after I give them the translations, I tell them the idea. In other words, let's say it's a contradiction. I show them the contradiction. Then they're supposed to study by themselves. They have to memorize the words and the statement. And then they have to get the idea. It's like two separate things. And then the third step, I try to push them that they should be able to see the idea in the words itself. But it's all done not like for a quarter of a year you work on just memorization, but it's all done simultaneously. In other words, I hold that you should never teach anything without the mind. Even when you train a kid to cross the street, you understand, you have to explain to him the harm of the, it should not be only authority. I mean, sometimes kids are wild, so you have to use authority. But however, it should be that when you tell a kid when something is wrong, you should be able to put it in his framework so that he could understand it. What's wrong with hitting somebody? Do you like to be hit? Would you like it? How would you feel? So that they can identify with somebody else. It has to be in the framework of understanding, because you should always be going to the mind. But if you bypass the mind, then you're immediately training the kid to memorize, and then you're going to have to undo it. In other words, you're teaching him a wrong way of operating, and then you're trying to straighten it out. Let me put it this way. If a person is not going to find an enjoyment in learning, then it's no gain anyway. The whole thing is no gain. The main thing is to give the kid a tool and enjoyment of learning. Okay? So if you have the enjoyment, if you want to learn, he'll get language. He'll get it on his own. I mean, and you are teaching him language. I'm not saying you should not teach language. I'm just afraid of teaching 6 months language of memorization. And look at yourself. How many times have you taken tests? How much do you remember after the test? So all the words are worthless. I mean, by me, they're obligated to read and translate every word, even words that they had five times. So they're constantly going over the words again and again and again. And after a while, they'll have the 200-300 words that you need for a language. So they'll get those terms they'll get. But I would not teach, and let's put it this way, if you want to get them to memorize, the only method I found that was good was give them 10 words on a test, a vocabulary test. Then the next week, give them 20 words, the first 10 and a new 10. Then the next week, give them 30, the old, and just keep adding to the list so they constantly have to memorize the old one again and again and again. After around 10, 15 times, they'll actually remember it. The problem with most tests is you give a test once, and then you got to move on. So the thing is, so it's forgotten. So if you want to teach memorizing that way, but it should not be part of the text. You should not teach memorization part of the text. The text is not a memorizing book. It's a learning book that must go straight to the mind. In other words, there are three steps. The one step is the language. Two is the logic. And then then they should see where the logic comes from the Gemara. And that should be done in the kasha. When you're doing the kasha, you go very slowly, and they pick up words slowly, but they're reviewing, and you use these terms in the discussion, so they constantly hear the Hebrew terms until they get used to it, and they pick up the words slowly, and it becomes part of them. And they're also picking up logic, and then they're also picking up abstracting from the words the idea. In other words, Rabbi Weiss says that if you teach the language separately, then at that point you have a certain view of the language already, an incorrect view. So therefore, the longer you teach it, the longer the incorrect view becomes part of them. Then suddenly you have to change to a correct view. They must know that these words are not like Newsweek. Newsweek, you don't have to use your mind. It's like watching TV. The mind doesn't go straight. Everything is said, and everything goes straight to you. You got it. It's clear. But it must go. Your mind must work on it. In the Gemara, your mind must work on it. It's not just the words. Like it just conveys simple ideas, like you read a magazine. It's a logical system, and the way it's written is also logic in getting the knowledge from the words. I'd like to explain the difference between thinking and memorization, a certain aspect. Okay, let's say you memorize something. And then you forget it. It was totally worthless, the memorization, because now you don't have it. In other words, it's of no use to you. In learning, if the mind sees it 100% clearly, it has affected who you are. It has affected the way you think. And even if you totally forget it, the benefit still remains. If you remember it, it's a good thing. You could use it. But even if you totally forget it, the benefit still remains. And so therefore, the main thing is working on thought, and there should be as little memorization as possible. There should be remembering. If you understand an idea, so then you remember it. Okay? If you don't understand the idea, so then, so you might, if you forget it, then it's totally worthless, you see? But learning, once the mind sees it clear, it doesn't matter insofar as the benefit is concerned, the essential benefit you got. But then there's a secondary benefit if you remember it, so then it becomes usable. In other words, if I don't have a word, I could always look it up in the dictionary, but I can't look up anything if my mind is not working correctly. Now, what am I going to look up? My mind is just not working. What I have to do is get my mind to work correctly. To work correctly, you must have a training of the mind. That is essential. And when you get a kid in high school, you have him for 4 years, you have to show him the world of ideas. And that was just the introduction. Now we'll get down to Gemara. There are two parts to the subject. There is the daf, okay, and then there's the system, okay? I'd like to explain that the framework, the system, what the you have to give. Now, how you give this framework or system, I give it based when the kids see the Gemara and they have certain problems, so they ask it, so I see they're ready for it. That's what I give it. But it can be given as a curriculum and worked out, okay? And I'll give a few, and then I'll tell you what you can do to build up on it, okay? Give you an introduction. First, they should know the history of halacha. In other words, that there's a Torah Shebichtav, a Torah Shebaalpeh. They should know a little bit about, not too detailed, but a little bit about how the Sanhedrin worked. That they had a case, and they discussed it. I usually draw on the board the way this where the Sanhedrin sat, and the three benches that was a semicircle in front of them where their students sat, and that they all discuss it. To begin with, they all discuss the problem. And so every idea of the greatest thinkers in halacha is in that room. You're talking about 71 judges plus I don't know how many students were in that room. So you're talking about 300-400 of the greatest minds, legal greatest minds discussing the problem. So they have every single point. And then the Sanhedrin votes on it. Whatever they vote on, that becomes halacha. Okay? Then when the Sanhedrin was disbanded because of the destruction of the Beis HaMikdash, so then things were, you know, you had your opinion, I had my opinion, there was nobody to answer it. So they decided to write down the oral law, and that was the Mishnah. And then later they had some notes, that was the Braisa, but they were still Tanoim, and then they closed, so that there shouldn't be too many possibilities, they closed it off, and then they had discussions about the Mishnah. The oral law was now the Mishnah and the Braisa. The Gemara had discussions for 200-300 years, and then that was found to be forgotten and lost, or too many possibilities. The Ravina Ravashi wrote that down. After that, each person wrote according to what he thought the needs of the time was, what they wrote. And basically, among the Rishonim, I don't give this to beginners. This should be given later on, but not to beginners. That is basically, from what I can see, is three styles. One is like Rashi, which is Pirish. One is like Tosfos Contradiction. And one is like the Rambam, which is halacha. He writes in for the halacha. But you could use the Rambam as a Pirish, you understand? But those were the three styles of writing that I've seen among the Rishonim. Okay? But anyway, I don't think that should be given. That's too detailed. All right, but so they should have a general how, what, I'm just giving you a very general outline. You might have more interesting stories. You might want to tell other things. I'm saying that I'm only telling you that they must have an introduction to the system, so when they learn the Gemara, it's in the framework of a system, okay? So I'll give you another few examples, okay? All right. Now, the thing is, it comes out, the question is like this. It comes out, since the Sanhedrin Paskins, let's say they Paskin different than what God said on Mount Sinai, so that we're not keeping God's system, right? That's the question. Now, when I answered this, I broadened it out into other areas. You might feel, no, you should only stick to this area. But I'll tell you the three areas. There are three areas that God gave over to the human being to take responsibility. Okay? The first thing is, God created the world incomplete. I mean, he didn't create it with airplanes. He didn't create it with cars. He didn't create bread, he created grain, and even that you have to work on, you understand? So basically, he created the world incomplete, and you have to complete the world, okay? That's one responsibility you have. The second responsibility, he created you incomplete, not only incomplete, but incorrect. You have a Yetzer Hara, you have an evil inclination that sees life incorrectly. You have a mind that makes terrible mistakes, so you have to straighten yourself out. That has to do with free will. Okay? So that's where the Torah comes in to help straighten you out, and you have to deal with yourself. The third thing, God created a Torah and gave it over to the human being to maintain the halachic system. Once he gave it over to human beings to maintain it, then there's going to be two types of problems. Okay? One problem is, as a human being, you can make a mistake. Okay? The Rambam says about the Rif, I think in all the Ritz works, I think he made 4 or 5 mistakes. Right? That's what the Rambam taught. Now, the Rambam argues with him in more places than that. The answer is there's a mistake, and then there's 2 logical possibilities. Either one could be right. We don't have the facts from Mount Sinai. So, therefore, he found certain mistakes in the Ritz, but he argues with him in other places where it's a matter of shikul hadas or intuition, the difference. Okay? So, so the thing is that that's, so therefore, when I keep a psak, it's not what God said on Mount Sinai. It's not the reality. It's what I'm obligated to do. That's it. I'm obligated based on what God said. God said, you must maintain the system. And as a human being, I must maintain the system. And as a human being, there's sometimes going to come out a mistake. There's sometimes going to come out shikul hadas. But I have to keep the system. I have no choice. But Posek Poskins, I must live by it. So that takes away, you see a lot of questions that kids have about Torah that were not, it's only humans that do it, you know, that type of question. The question of, we're not doing what God said, that type of question. All those type of questions are gone because it's God's will that we keep the, that we maintain it. Not only that, if Moshe Rabbeinu came down now and said that that's not what I said, tough luck, we're not allowed. If I listened to Moshe Rabbeinu then, I would be wrong. I wouldn't be following the system. The only way Moshe Rabbeinu could paskin, if he starts from the Tanoim and goes all the way down to Moshe Feinstein, and then after that he paskins, then I could listen to him. But if he paskins as a Navi, I'm not allowed to listen to him. Then the next thing is what I tell them is suck. There's 3 ways of paskening. Okay? One is I follow a Rebbe, whether he's alive or dead. In other words, if I read the Chaya Adam, he's a Posek. You understand? If I read the Mishnah Berurah, he's a Posek, but he's not alive. Or I could go to a rabbi and pasken. Okay? That's the first way of suck. The second way of psak, you paskin based on rules. You know, suffik deraisa lachumra. If it's a machlokas and a deraisa and there's only one individual that holds lachumra and everybody holds lakula, then even a deraisa you could go lakula. Suffik derabonan you could go lakula. Suffik bracha you go lachumra. You understand? You don't say the bracha because you're using God's name in vain, etc., etc. You paskin by rules. Okay? The third way of paskening is by intuition, okay? The Rush, when he was a young man, paskin, there's a machlokas like this, whether you say one bracha over the tefillin, or you say 2 brachas. So if you're talking about suffik bracha lakula, so then you should only make 1 bracha. So when he was a young man, the Rush made only 1 bracha. Then when he got older, he made 2 brachas. Question is, what happened to suffik bracha? The answer is he wasn't paskening from rules. He was paskening from shikul hadas. Shikul hadas means this. Shikul hadas means that from all my years, it's my intuition. When you start a subject, there's a certain intuition. When you have a contradiction and you don't know the answer, there's a certain intuition that guides you a certain way. And that's from years of training, you perfect the intuition that you can come more in line with the truth and you can go faster by training. Okay? Shikul hadas means all the years of learning, my intuition tells me I'm drawn to this svara over that svara, not emotionally, but intuitively, based on all of the years of learning. Okay? So that's the 3 levels of psak. And, I mean, you have to go a little slower than what I'm doing now, but you have to break down that so they see the system of psak. Okay? The question is, what does this have to do with teaching Gemara? The answer is that I said there are 2 things. There is the particular kasha and teretz on the block, and then there's the framework in which they look at halacha. And you're giving them a framework of knowledge of the system and how the system works. And that will help them because they see the framework in which they're learning Gemara. Now, there are many, many books on methodology of Gemara. And if you're going to teach Gemara, it's worth reading them. Different styles, of what each one holds is an introduction. But there are two no-nos in teaching your students what you should not take, which methods you should not give over to the class. One is if they're complicated, and two, if it's too detailed or too abstract. You understand? You have to know who your students are, and I'll give you an example, okay? There are 13 methods in which the Torah is interpreted, right? Now, every one of these methods are irrational. The way I explain it would be like if I wrote a book, and every third paragraph, every tenth word, if you put them together, you'll get information about the book. But you can only use this method of interpretation only in this book. It's not a rational outside of this book. Okay? That is the way I explain the 13 Midos. Okay? But there's one that is an interesting contradiction. The Kal Vachomer is rational. Okay? All right. Now, so Rabbi Chait one time explained it that why is it irrational? Because we always assume when we have two qualities in the Torah, we have the right to assume that they're quantitative difference and I can make a Kal Vachomer, and the burden is on you to prove that it's a qualitative difference, therefore it can't be used. Okay? In the world around us, in the logical world, if you want to use a Kal Vachomer, the burden is on you to prove that it's a quantitative thing. You see the difference? That idea I would not tell to the students. I would tell the first idea of what the 13 Midos are. But how the Kal Vachomer is irrational, that's a detail for beginners. Maybe in the fourth level or fifth level of Gemara, maybe, you know, I might want to show them an idea when they're doing a Kal Vachomer and I feel they're ready for it, I might want to do that. Or an Yeshiva Gedola. But they don't have to know that for making a lady. It's too detailed. It's not going to benefit them. It's not going to help them. So therefore I say, using that as an example, if you learn methodology books, you have to see which ones are too detailed. It might be enjoyable to know, but it's not going to help them make a lady. Okay? Now, once again, I'm going over the Kal Vachomer, the problem with the Kal Vachomer. The Kal Vachomer, when in Torah, when you see two qualities that you want to make a Kal Vachomer out of, so then you assume, you have the right to assume, the irrationality of it is that you assume it's a quantitative difference between these two qualities. But and it's the burden of the other person, or the Gemara, to show that it's a qualitative difference, show it's wrong. In everyday life, if I want to make Kal Vachomer, the burden is on me to prove that these two qualities is a quantitative difference. In other words, let's say you want to make a Kal Vachomer between walking, jogging, and running, something like that. Well, how do you know it's a quantitative difference? Maybe it's three different things. The burden of proof is on you. You understand? You have to prove that that's quantitative and you can make a Kal Vachomer. Maybe it's equal to non-movement and movement. It's two different qualities. It's not a quantitative thing. And maybe walking and jogging is totally two different qualities of movement. And it's not a quantitative difference. So the burden of proof is on you. You want to make a Kal Vachomer out of it. Not if these qualities are in Gemara or in Torah. Then I have the, if it's in Torah, then automatically I have the right to assume that it's a quantitative difference and I can make the Kal Vachomer. And if you want to disprove it, then the burden of the disproof is upon you. I mean, that idea is not for beginners. They have a hard time understanding a Kal Vachomer altogether. This type of thing is a sophisticated thing if you understand Kal Vachomer. So what I'm saying is, what I'm giving you is I'm showing you that students need a framework in which to see what the Gemara is doing. Now, I've gotten my method, my framework, based on questions that students ask me. There might be some that you want to say no, even if they don't ask me, I feel it's important for them to know. Or you might want to set up a curriculum and not wait till they ask. That's fine. All I'm saying is you should be very careful where the student is at, what's a beginner's idea that he needs to help them, and what is a development, a later on development, for either upper levels of the Gemara, of high school, or Yeshiva Gedolah, altogether. That ends the first side of learning. That's the introduction we had. The problem with getting them from memorizing to thought. Then that was the introduction. The second thing is the framework in which the Gemara is written. What the system is. That we're dealing with Pesach, and it's a legal system, so we're dealing with Pesach, and they must know what this is. They must know the framework. And now, we're going to go to the second point, and that is the laning itself. And the first thing is that you have to know, and I sometimes teach the kids in general, that there is two systems, deduction and induction. Basically, the way I explain it is deduction is you get new facts, okay? Somebody knocks on the door. Now, you interpret that. You heard a knock. You interpret that it's Knuckles and not a woodpecker, and therefore the deduction is that a human being is out there, and based on that, you say, who's there? You understand? So you don't realize when somebody knocks on the door, you are deducing new facts. You see a shadow, the form of the shadow, if it's of a human being, you deduce it's a human being that's behind you. You see water running from 9th Street to 10th Street, you deduce a new fact that 9th Street is higher than 10th Street. That is deduction. Very simple. Don't get it. I mean, I know this is, in logic, a very deep thing, a very simple. You're talking to beginners, and examples are very important. Okay? Induction. Induction is, I want to explain how the facts work. Okay? In other words, Einstein's theory of relativity or Newton's theory of gravity, they had facts about the physical world, and they were explaining why the physical world works that way. But I tell them, I said, I'm not here to teach you the second part. That's when you go, when you move up to the next class, they start in that class. I'm only here to teach you the first part. Okay? Now, there is something called abstraction. Okay? Abstraction is very simple. Color cannot be separated from an object. You cannot pick up color in your hand. You could pick up paint. You could pick up a board that has been painted, but you cannot pick up color. But in my mind, I could discuss color as if it's a separate entity. That is called abstraction. The further you go from the physical, the more abstract it is. Okay? Now, the way the Gemara was written, they wrote one statement for a contradiction. I'll soon get to how we explain contradiction, but if I'm explaining this point, I mean, the kids know contradiction and answer already, but I'm just explaining it to you so that you understand what you're trying to get across. They have to abstract. Elaining means that they're able to read, translate, and explain the logic. From the words that they read and translated, they have to abstract from one statement, they have to abstract what the contradiction is, based on past information, or based on, all the different ways of knowing how to figure out a contradiction. You understand? So therefore, they are also learning to abstract. Okay? So they're learning those two things. If they learn how to make a laning, it's not only the reading of the words, but they've been trained in deduction, and they've been trained in abstraction, certain level of abstraction. Okay? And later on, they'll learn induction. In other words, these are the logics that you have to get across whether you tell them these terms or explain these terms or not, you must get it across to them, these ideas. And once they have these ideas, then they can make a landing. And the base, by the time they get these ideas, the basic words that you need to make a landing, they have. And you always have to look up a Jastrow. I mean, how far advanced you are, most people need a Jastrow at some point. Okay? So just a beginner needs a Jastrow more often than an advanced person needs it less often. What I'm trying to get across is the way the Amorayim wrote the Gemara is that you are learning abstraction. In other words, the way they wrote the Gemara, you are learning abstraction. If you learn to make a laning, you have developed to a certain level of abstraction. And you're going to need the abstraction a lot in definition. That's the whole thing in definition. That's where the real term, technically, abstraction is used. But in a certain way, the way they wrote it, there is a certain level of abstraction that you're learning already, that you're moving into the world of induction to, even though it's a deductive thing because you're really deducing the fact. But the way they wrote it, there is a element of abstraction on a very, very simple level that it's training the mind. In other words, they are ready, the way they wrote it, they're moving you to the abstract world. That's a very good way of putting it. In other words, if a person only learns how to make a laning, and he decides he doesn't go further, he doesn't have the ability to go further, he has trained his mind in all the basic methods of logic, you understand? Not on a very abstract level, but he has trained himself on a certain level of training. And if he moves on, it already makes it easier for him for definition. Mm-hmm. So if you teach laning correctly, you're really helping the guy like a step towards svara. Mm-hmm. Let me say that. I don't know if they wrote the Gemara this way for that reason, but this is definitely a benefit. In the way they did write it, it's definitely a benefit. I don't know the purpose why they wrote it this way. There might be other purposes. But this is definitely a benefit in the way they wrote it. The thing is that I don't show these methods to the students, but sometimes when I'm trying to prove the benefit of Gemara, so I tell them these ideas of logic, and I tell them that if you learn to make a laning, this is how you got it. There's no other science that was written this way, that it was written for your benefit. You understand that you benefit just by learning how to read this book. You have developed your mind in every area of type of logic on a very superficial level.
Right.
And that's already an introduction for svara and concepts and definitions and theories. Insofar as the Gemara is concerned, the only one of these that I would actually teach would be deduction. To show them, like, in other words, if you knock on a door, it's not a fact that when you say come in, it's not based on a fact, but it's based on a deduction. That I have to show them because the whole Gemara is based on deduction. So that I do, at that point, I do have to show them. But the other point, I only show them when I'm trying to show the benefit of learning how to make a laning and to encourage them to make a laning. I show them all the benefits. I don't have to teach them this, but when I teach them contradiction, they're automatically learning it. But I don't have to point it out to them, you know what I mean? For the learning, I don't have to point this out. For the actual learning. So therefore, I just point it out for the to give them encouragement. But deduction, that I have to point out, because every step in the Gemara is deduction. Because when you do teach these levels of logic, you might have gone through logic books and you have details. Just give them simple. Deduction is new facts. Induction is finding out how it works. And give them an example. I always use the example of color, the easiest one that they could see, abstraction. Sometimes I give them geometry. I show them that I define form as the end of an object. Now, you can't separate the end of the object from the object. By definition, you can't separate it. But we have a whole science called geometry, which is based on form. And not only that, now you can understand why a line is defined as length without width. But the end of a thing has length of the form, but there's no width. There's no width to the end, and a point on that place has no length and no width. You see? So the definitions fit into the, if you know what form is, if you define it as the end of an object, then you understand the definitions of a point and a line. Okay. So when the student can read and translate, and abstract what the Gemara is saying, that is what we call a laning. Okay? I use the yeshiva word laning in class, and I define it for them exactly what we're doing. Now to the Gemara. Okay? Like I said, the big problem in teaching Gemara is that there's, especially in methodology, you'll find on every line you could spend hours on different methods that is there. You have to choose that which is necessary for the student to make a laning. It should be only practical, that which helps the student to make a laning, and I just work on three things. Anything else that I use is only to help me with these three things. Contradiction, answer, and sequence. Okay? Contradiction, the definition of a contradiction, it's two statements, both are opposites, both are true. If I say it's raining outside and it's not raining outside, I'm in a contradiction. If I say, is it raining or is it not raining, both statements are not, neither one is a fact. I just don't know which is the correct fact. That is not a contradiction. Contradiction is where I make a positive statement that it's raining and it's not raining. Okay? Most answers, not all answers, most answers to contradictions is the two facts that are contradicting each other are subdivided. Okay, hold on. There are different types of contradictions you will find. Like, for instance, sometimes there's a statement of one Mishnah that contradicts the statement of another Mishnah. Sometimes it's the implication of one Mishnah that contradicts a statement or an implication of another Mishnah. Sometimes you're arguing with an authority. Your contradiction and authority, logically, it's a contradiction, but insofar as our system is concerned, you are wrong because you can't, the authority becomes the reality and you cannot argue with them. So therefore it becomes a contradiction. So these are details that you have to explain in explaining the contradiction. There are different types of contradiction, and as you come across it, you will see the different types of contradictions. And then you'll explain the different types. The answer most of the times is a subdivision, okay? When you see railroad tracks, you see they come together. Then you see a train coming, and you predict that because the tracks come together, the railroad is going to derail. And then you notice that the train doesn't derail, so you're caught in a contradiction. So we subdivide between the physical world and the way the eyes see the physical world is not always precise. So we subdivide it. In other words, we have two facts, one that the railroad tracks come together, and two, that the train did not derail. Okay? That's a contradiction. So how we answer the contradiction is we subdivide between what the physical world is and how the human being perceives the physical world. So it's a subdivision. So the two facts, you're going to have to make a subdivision, and the Gemara only makes one statement, and that one statement you have to see the subdivision. That is one type of answer. There are other types of answers. I mean, you can work it out. I mean, I'm just showing you examples. All right, and now for sequence. Sequence, the way I teach Gemara, is sequence always usually starts with a statement. It could start with the statement of the Mishnah, or it could start with a statement of an Amora. Whatever it starts, then the Gemara questions that statement. And every statement goes back to the original statement. So I always hold them, like for instance, let's say, for instance, I'm up to the third step. So I tell them, you are not obligated to know the translation for what I tested you on the translation, but you are obligated to know the sequence that happened until this step that we're doing now, because that's part of the sequence, so I make them have in mind the sequence. Now, what I'm starting to notice lately is that there are different types of sequences, and what I'm thinking of being careful of and watching, and you can do it yourself, is to try to define all the different types and formulate all the different types of sequences. It would be interesting. But don't give out any of the methods that you get should not be given out as a method to apply. They should always be abstracting. And that is the difficulty with there are certain keywords which tell you that it is going to be a certain logic. Okay? Now, I tell them the word with the abstraction. But if you give a test on these words, what I'm always afraid of is that they're going to memorize or even think about this word and then apply it when they get there looking for that logic which the word says instead of abstracting from the word the contradiction or the answer. Now, in other words, it is a help, but you have to be very, very careful. It's a borderline case of, you know what I mean, of that it, because application is very bad. Once they apply, then that's not laning. Laning is the words speak to you. You don't apply. You're not looking for something. The words teach you. And you will abstract it as you train to think a certain way. Then you will automatically, you'll be creative and abstract. But if you apply, that is not being creative. You're looking for something that the Gemara tells you it should be this logic, and now you're looking for it. I have to be very careful of that they shouldn't be applying, but they should be abstracting. So the key word is a benefit if you do it in the right way. If you don't do it in the right way, it could be a harm. Okay? Those key words. But anyway, in other words, Matt put it correctly, that it's a sophisticated form of memorization. So that has to be, you have to be careful. In other words, you must always train the child to abstract. He's abstracting from the words the idea. You see? If he does that, it's unbelievable. He'll naturally go into definition. He knows what he's doing. Now, insofar as sometimes you see definitions, right? Okay? Now, there's two ways to get across a definition. One is there's a method. You have the Gemara, now we have the facts of the Gemara, and now we ask a contradiction. The contradiction, we abstract the principle of the, or the concept, right? In my class, if I see a clear definition, then what I, and if it's simple, it's close to the words, then I give them a new method, because that's going to confuse them. They must stick to laning. But I do use definition if it's a very, very simple definition, then it's just part of the description. And those that get it, they have the description without the definition. So like one kid was tested this week and he couldn't get the definition, but he had the whole description. I gave him a 4-round. Why? Because that's a further development and that's the next class. You understand? But if they understand the definition, so then it's clear. But it's not that I'm teaching them how to think that way. That's not my job as a beginner in Gemara. Explain, that's correct. I only explain it. It helps clarify the subdivision. So it's only a clarification of the subdivision. That's all.
Right, but you don't highlight the fact.
Like, for instance, this, yesterday I had a discussion, and the thing is that many times you learn a Mishnah, and you have one view of the facts, and when you learn the Gemara, you have it's a totally different view. But we don't bring the student back to the Mishnah. That might be another development. I never did that. But you understand, what I'm saying here is I'm just showing you in general, there are two parts to teaching beginners. There's the overall picture of the system, and two, there's the laning itself. What you teach, how far you go, that you have to experience and experiment yourself. It also could depend on the class. On a weak class, you might work one way and not push the sequence or going back to the Mishnah. On a good class, you might push it more, so because they could take it. So the thing is, it's dependent on the class, and I'm only giving you enough information that you should be able to work out your own ideas on it and develop your own ideas in teaching it. Okay? But I'm just showing you, this is the basis of teaching kids the beginner's Gemara from nothing to be able to make a laning. The question is that mussar, I don't show the logic of the steps, and I don't go back and show all the steps. The answer is, in mussar, I'm more interested in the subject. Okay? In Gemara, I'm more interested in training the mind than the logic. Okay? So therefore, one, I have to show the sequence and go back, and one, I just stick to make sure they have every step answered practically, and but I don't have to show the logic, because it's two different subjects. In Gemara, it's the subject, and Musa, it's not the subject. Doesn't mean you can't do that. It depends on the situation. It might be beneficial. It might turn off the kids. They had enough with the discussion itself. You have to experiment. But the subject of Musa is, I'm interested in the subject per se. In Gemara, they'll get the subject per se later on when they start definitions. That's really analyzing the subject. I'm only teaching them how to make a laning, which is this type of logic that I'm trying to get across. So therefore, I have to show them the whole way the mind works, and that the whole, that it's step by step, and every step is connected. I'll give you another example of an overall picture. For instance, if you want to train your mind, you should take one sequence. Okay? Now, you'll notice that you go from step to step in every sequence. Now, you review the sequence again, and that review is very different than memorization. Memorization is going over information, but the mind is not working. Review means the mind is always working, right? So when you go over it and review it, you'll see new ideas and you'll get it clearer. So there's one chacham that said that you should go over it so many times until in your mind you can go through every step that it looks like it's all one big step. That's how, in other words, that's part of training of the mind. Now, I might tell the kids this idea at a certain point, let's say mid-year or towards the end of the year. For those kids that are really working on it, they might try it. When I saw that method, I tried it in certain propositions in geometry. You understand? I tried it. You understand? It was interesting. And it was interesting to see how the mind looks at it. So, but I don't know if everybody's interested. I can't force them. But it's another thing to tell them about logic. You understand? That might come up in the discussion. It might help them. It might benefit them. Some of them not. So, again, what you feel is important, and what you're going to add and what you're going to take away, you understand? So that you're going to have to choose yourself from your own experience when you start teaching. But you should have all the methods to be able to answer questions when they're asked. Review or abstracting from the Gemara, or reviewing the Gemara, or reviewing the sequence in your mind, or reviewing it in the Gemara. If you're reviewing, you should see new things. If you're memorizing, you don't see anything new because the mind is not working. But if you're reviewing, you should see new things. If you review and the mind doesn't see new things, then there's no gain. Then you know what I mean? But you could, there's a Gemara that says that there's a difference if you review something 100 times or 101 times. There was a Pirush that I saw. He says that's only the example that they use. He says, but there's a difference if you review it 300 times and 301 times. Which means that if you review, you're going to see new things. If you don't, then you're not. If you don't see something new, then you're not reviewing. Or you just reach the point where you can't get out of anything anymore, then move on, and maybe next time you'll be able to last longer. You understand? But then move on if you can't get anything new. Okay? That's review.